Well, you are listening to The Best Country here on 98.9 FM, and he's certainly one of the best, been one of my favourites for many, many years, and that is the new single, 60 Summers, from Graham Connors, and he is with us live in the studio. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning, Dan. Always good to catch up with you.
It is indeed, and let me just say off the top, as you know, I've been a big fan for many years, and I think your newest record is some of your best.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to be able to sit back and look at a whole career and try and bring it into one. Well, it's two CDs, yeah. As it turned out, 37 songs. And, you know, I started doing this 40-plus years ago, and it only seems like yesterday to me.
Does it really?
You know, it's been a wonderful trip, wonderful journey, and thankfully I've got the support of, you know, enough people with great taste and discernment to still be able to do it. It's lovely.
Looking back over the songs and the career, can you pinpoint, you know, something that was, I don't know, the game changer for you, or your perhaps your favourite?
North was definitely the game changer. I mean, I left school and got into the music business and was sort of like an endless touring artist, opening the show for various people. And you probably know the story, but it was like started with Sherbet and then it became like Dal Shannon and Chris Christopherson and Rita Coolidge, and then on to Bill Cosby, Dave Allen, Liza Minnelli, Peter Allen, Marsha Hines and John English. You know, it was just, I was opening the show for these people. It was a great apprenticeship to watch these people side of stage. But it wasn't until 1988, and bear in mind it was 73 when I started. 1988 I had my first serious success with A Little Further North each year. Mm. So that was the tipping point for me. And when I got back in the field of play, it was like I'd already a lot of songs up my sleeve, because I'd always been writing and sort of believing that one day I'd get to that point. And so when I did get the success with North, the album, I had songs coming out of my ears, you know what I mean? So I was able to do Southeast Days, Tropicali, and then on through, what, 18 CDs now.
You know? Holy
this
moly.
This is one where I look back as a career overview plus new songs.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to look at my career as sort of like the past. I still feel, honestly, in my heart of hearts, that the best song that Graham Connors hasn't written is coming. You know what I mean? So it is
well,
one of those.
I guess you got to stay motivated and on the ball. I guess that's how you do it.
It's not even a will to do. It's actually, I believe it. I actually believe that as time goes on, writing is one of those things you get better at. Now, if you're going to play football, you're going to have peak years in which physically you can cope and you can do all this sort of stuff. But the music industry, hopefully, is one where accumulated wisdom and understanding and knowledge and all that stuff grows with you. And that's why I love to look at, say, Willie Nelson and think, what a great life to be in your 80s where he is, still creating great work. And I believe that old Willie could come up with his best piece yet too. You know, it's one of those things.
I'm jealous of you, because the songs that you sing and play and write are the ones that, you know, I've always wanted to be able to sing and play and write. So, you know, it's my kind of music, and yeah, I'd love to be able to do it. I mean, can anyone do what you do, or
I can do what I do. Okay, we know that. There's the sum of my life experiences add up to the songs that I write. The sum of your life experiences add up to the songs that you write. The song we took, Troy, his life experiences add up to what he does. And you have to follow that. The most important thing is to work. Get up each day and do your job. And that's the stumbling point for a lot of people, because if on a bad day they sit there staring at a blank piece of paper, they lose confidence in the fact that they can do it. And we all writers go through that, but you've got to line up again the next day and stay with it, and that's how you create a catalogue of songs.
Do you have to decipher what's good from what's not so good, or do other people tell you that? You know, when you're testing songs out on, say, your wife or your band members, how do you figure out what is a good song, or do you just know straight away?
I sort of got a good feel, but I have made mistakes in the past. I remember the story, The Ringer and the Princess, when I wrote that.
Oh, wait a minute. You're not going to tell me that was a bad song.
No. I'm going to tell you what happened, though.
There were more verses, were there?
No. God, please, no. Yeah. It took me, like, seriously 6 to 8 weeks or something to write that song, okay? And that was like working at it every day. I knew the story, but to condense it and to make it all come together. And when I finished it, I'd fallen out of love with the song because it had been such hard work. And I put it in the bottom drawer and said, it's too long anyhow, 6 minutes worth of song. I mean, who's going to listen to six minutes?
Well, it's the go-to for country radio presenters when we need to go and have a coffee. Yeah,
that's right. It's the go-to. The classic. And then it wasn't until I was in Gladstone, I think it was, doing a show, and we'd run out of encores, and I dug out The Ringer and the Princess, and the audience just went like, we love this song, and that's when I put it. So I was sort of a little bit behind the, you know, I was wrong about that song. It had a lot more power than I thought.
Let's go back to the early days. When did you decide that you could, you know, because what I love about your music is, you know, straight away from the first sentence, it's a Graham Connors song from just your voice. Did you have to find your voice, or was it something that came to you very early on?
Dan, this is the gift I was given, you know, and it's like when I was a kid, I couldn't stand the voice because it was very high, very high. So I always got the harmony part in the song. So someone else would be doing the lead and I'd be singing the high harmony. But that was good because I sort of started to think of myself as like Paul McCartney.
There you go.
Oh, Paul McCartney, he sings those high parts, you know. And then as I matured and all that sort of stuff, my voice gained in the lower register. And I started to like it. I started to enjoy the sound of my own voice. And that's a big thing. I know a lot of artists who take a long time to actually enjoy the sound of their own voice and be comfortable with it. And the only thing that I will say is that because I have such a large range, and it's not for any other reason than it's a gift, my songwriting reflects that. So I'll do some songs that are right down here and I'll do some songs that span the whole thing.
Mm.
And it can make it difficult for another artist who doesn't have that sort of range to reinterpret your songs. And they end up being Graham Connors songs, you know.
Practice? I mean, do you still have to put in a lot of practice, or do you just pick up the guitar? Because your guitar playing style as well is something that's, you know, not easy. You're not just strumming a few chords there, you're finger picking and you're doing the real technical stuff on the guitar.
Well, it's all to serve the song, you understand. It's just to make the song work.
Come on, you're showing off.
If I
had your chops, I'd be showing off.
I look at people like Tommy Emmanuel, and I mean, there's a man who's just genius personified. The guitar for me is a way to get the song out. It's as simple as that. I don't practice enough because I'm too concerned about writing the next song. And really, you should allocate an hour and a half every day, pick up the instrument and just play something till you get it perfectly right. You know what I mean? So it feels good. And these are things, as I keep going back to, as time goes on with me and a long career in the music industry, you've got to do your work every day. You can't slouch off. It's like, but it's not work when you love it.
Mm.
It becomes just doing
What you do.
Yeah. And songwriting is what I do. So as a consequence, my playing sometimes goes by the wayside. And sometimes even vocally, I have to do a bit of work before I go on tour just to sort of make sure everything's smooth and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
I love the song we just heard, 60 Summers. You've put a nice little one in there for your wife. You've got a hot little wife there.
That's 60 Summers has been. We did a film clip for that too, which has worked really well.
You got some brownie points there?
Did I ever.
Nice.
Lynn says, gee, it took a long time to write that song. I wrote another one which I should play for you, which is The Oldest Kid in Town,
cool,
which is sort of in keeping with the 60 Summers thing, you know what I mean? And it's sort of a love song too, you know.
All right, well, 40 years in the music industry.
Yeah.
What's some of the biggest changes you've seen for the better, I suppose, or for the worse?
Well, you understand when I started in this game, it was like reel-to-reel tape all the musicians in a studio playing the song down.
Playing live.
Yeah. I loved that. I really, really loved it. You don't see that as often anymore. Nowadays it's done in stages a lot of the time.
Multi-tracking.
Yeah, multi-tracking, and players will come in and do three or four songs.
Or players don't even need to come in. They can be in the other side of the world.
Well, people will actually get, people from anywhere to drop tracks on their albums.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing for you?
I'm sad. Yeah. I really loved the camaraderie of musicians in a room, all having a joke, making music, being ready, being focused, being all powered up to record. You know,
because you do get that feeling as well, don't you? Before you go on stage, you're all accelerated, your muscles are tense, you're ready to
you're ready to put on a performance, and that's really cool. The digitization of music to me made it a little bit. So it took the worth out of it. When I was a kid, I'd buy a vinyl record or a cassette or eventually a CD, take it home and allocate an amount of time to listen to it. So I would have an hour in the evening and I'd put it on and I'd listen to every song and I'd make assessments about I like that one, I don't like this one, oh, that's new and different, all that sort of stuff. Since it's been digitized, it's like I find myself, like a lot of people, listening to 1.5 songs. I listen to a bit of it, and then it's like, I'll come back to that, flick on to the next one, flick on to the next one. Then next thing you know, I'm jumping to another album, you know what I mean? And it's like my connection with music is not as powerful as it once was because I knew every track on that album. Every single track was important to me, whereas now I might get the latest Adele album or something like that and I'll hear one track and say, oh, I love that song, yeah. Oh, hang on, is the phone ringing over here? You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like it's really weird. It's this reducing songs to something that don't exist on a hard.
Yeah.
They're in the air almost.
Yeah, ether.
That's right. So they're my – on the positive side, I guess it means that –
Well, distributions of
the whole world of music is available to the listener now. You can get onto any of these streaming services, and once adequate compensation for streaming needs to be addressed, it's very difficult for an artist to make any sort of income out of streaming when it's 0.00014 of a cent or something per stream. So you understand, unless you're in the million streams situation, you're not making a livelihood. You can't live on that sort of stuff. So positives, negatives, it's good that I can reference anything now. If you said to me, there's a new artist, so-and-so, I can go straight to one of these platforms, and whether it's Apple or Spotify or whatever, and just have a quick listen to it and say, yes, I do like that, and then go back to it. And that's what we used to do at record shops. You go into the record shop and spend an hour and a half.
With the headphones on.
Yeah, the headphones on, listening and all that sort of stuff. I don't want to sound like an old guy sort of reminiscing, because it's moved on and there's no point. You can't go back. I just know that I revere music, if you know what I'm saying. It's a reverence for music that says let it command your attention. Don't make it sort of third thing on the list. You know, driving your car, speaking on the mobile phone while the music's on in the radio in the background. I can't see that. That's crazy. Anyhow, it's what it is. And I've found I have to allocate time now. For my favourite artists, Randy Newman's, the John Prines, people like that, when they have a new
Randy piece, Newman, really?
Ah, love
him. He's great, isn't he?
Love him as a songwriter.
Yeah.
John Prine, another great songwriter.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Even if I want to go back and listen to an old Harry Nilsson record or something or CD, I allocate time, give myself an hour and just let it wash over me and enjoy everything.
All right, we have to take a break for the news and traffic, and we'll be back with Graham Connors in just a moment. And we're going to get a live song as well. How's that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, cool. Back in a minute. Well, welcome back. Graham Connors is our guest this morning on the Brekkie Show. We're having a bit of an extended yarn with him. He is perhaps one of the greatest songwriters our country's ever seen, and is back with that new record. And going to be playing some shows around the place. It's exciting. You still love performing live? Is that,
love
up
it.
There with you know, the best parts of your job?
Well, it's the ultimate celebration, isn't it, of all the other work you do. Songwriting is alone. You generally, I mean, I very rarely co-write. So it's like me with a blank piece of paper. Then you go into the studio, which opens it up to another sort of smaller unit of people. And then you go out in the road and you tour it. And that's where you get, you know, hundreds or a thousand people to come and celebrate with you. We're doing a Queensland tour from May 27 through to June 4. We're doing like Mackay, Townsville, Cairns, and then we swing around and do Rocky, Bundaberg, Redlands here in Brisbane, and then the Empire Theatre up in Toowoomba.
Beautiful.
And they're all lovely venues, all theatre venues, and if you just go to grahamconnors.com, you'll be able to see the information you need. But I've got a great band. I mean, it's Scotty Hills on drums. And,
oh, cool.
You'd know Jeff Camilleri on bass. Yep. I don't know if you know Jeff.
Yeah, I know Jeff.
Fantastic. Brett Wood on guitar is just absolutely fabulous. Gary Carruthers on mandolins and banjo and all that sort of stuff, and Andy Shravmade on keyboards and piano.
So the full band, the full kit caboodle.
Five-piece band. Yeah, I love making music with people. That's what it's about. And if you're going to come to a concert, make it an event. You know, it's like a lot of people say they enjoy solo performances, but if given the opportunity, I'd rather see five players up there with an artist or more, just creating moments, you know, and that's what the tour's about.
All right, we're going to get you to play a live song for us.
This
now.
One's going to be solo, though.
Yes, this will be solo, unless you want me to bang along on the table here. All right, the album is out now. Check out grahamconnors.com for all the details, and an absolute pleasure spending some time hanging out with you talking
Thank
music
you,
this
Ben.
Morning.